Awesome. Do this.
Absolutely, take your time. I know more people are coming, but this is.
You said more people are?
Yes, this is.
They have to
come. What is our report?
It's 50% of 50% over 50% of membership. We have 8 seated members, so right now we have 2 membership. So I have some people who said they can't make it. I mean, moving to weekly meetings, I suspected this would be the case, which is why this is technically considered a working session. And actually, I'm going to tell you, please don't still allow me to come to all of these. You can't make it or otherwise. But
you're good. I figured since I was the last two.
No, actually, you're always welcome. And we value your input, but considering that A, it's not weekly, and B, we're going next week, there'll be a number of meetings where it's just where we're going to attend. So please feel free to show. You were sending your delegate.
Maybe I'll send Ryan a few times just to get him, like,
used to this. Yeah, so I said you're always welcome. I don't mean to drag you through this more. I know how busy everyone is, so.
Yeah, thanks.
So how come this room?
This room, because the Office of the Assemblies has been unable to reserve me a room, and as a law student, only law students can reserve this, and you can reserve a week in advance. So I reserved this, suspecting the office might not be able to get me a room, and they weren't. So I said, the conference room is big enough, and it's reasonably centrally located, and with directions, most people find it. So it's either this or Mann Library, which I also had access to rooms for. They weren't available, and those are even further off the field. So.
Yeah, the opposite of the campus. There's also a room you can reserve in the library called the John F. C.
I noticed, I looked into that as well. I emailed them, they said, we need a department chart. And I said, in this case, I'll just go through our, And they said, because you're not, first I said, are you a student organization? No, we're a university registered organization, and that threw them for a slight loop. By the time the logistics would have had to do, I said, hey, going forward, you should be at Bay Hall, and B, it's just, I can get this room where it's going to be.
That's okay. Because the room is, So Michelle's going to be here?
Michelle cannot be here. I can tell you exactly. I can tell you Michelle can't be here. Jeremy will be late. David Putnam cannot be here. He's out of town. Reese Weavers cannot be here. I mean, I'm pretty sure we can't get a quorum. Actually, we certainly can't get a quorum. But that is life. Let's see what we can get up. Reese can't be here. Michelle can't be here. Chief Zoner cannot be here.
When's the next meeting at the UA?
Next meeting at UA is not this coming Tuesday, but the next, so 2 weeks from yesterday.
So we don't have a timeline.
Well, in terms of this point, considering that I don't have the listener here, the UA's directive to us yesterday is technically invalid. So the bylaws actually prohibit them from ordering the committees. It says the committees have discretion in our agendas. They can request information, which they will get. I will happily give them the timeline, which is primarily that we don't have one yet because we couldn't get our people in the room. We are meeting next week, though, so I presume we'll be able to get better attendance. But in terms of a timeline, what I envisioned is that we're going to pick a week, a Friday probably, that is next, I don't want to do next Friday, but we're running for fall break, so that's obviously going to put a timeline. Or the Friday for fall break, no one's going to be here, and so you can't inform them, but I'll find a Friday. We're going to have some open forum, get whoever I can get the room in there, and throw it open, take feedback. I'm going to be engaging with a number of administrators, I'm actually asking some law school faculty today for their thoughts, going to do some research. And the hope is then just to start working through and brainstorming it. The issue is, and yesterday the assembly was very proud of itself for its resolution for the motion, and I tried to, not to be the bucket of cold water, but I tried to say there's some. You're asking quite a lot, and as I said, we'll certainly give it our best attempt, but.
So is Dave going to be here?
he should be here, and I know he's available, so I don't know where he is, and he knows his room is.
Yeah.
But
I don't want to make one terrible.
Oh no, I don't want to make that terrible. Hey Sarah, how are you?
Sorry, I'm late.
Don't worry about it. I don't know if you should know. We have enough people who aren't going to be here, so it's going to be light. It's going to be, in terms of attendance, it's going to be light. We're just going to be discussing the code changes and then briefly touching on our strategy for approaching the proverbial elephant in the room. But Richard, to your point, it's a lot of by. I mean, if they want a detailed timeline, I can give them one, but we won't be able to stick to it.
Yeah, giving a detailed timeline with candidates.
Well, and that's my hope.
Yeah, that's how I think.
Unfortunately, actually, after fall break, my first semester, my first half class ends, and then I will not be the team anymore. Advantageous. But I think once Terrell gets back, we'll start an actual discussion.
I was
intuitive. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Your name sounded familiar. I was wondering.
I was this teacher first, and then when this happened, I became his advisor, and then I became the faculty senate representative.
I had some more advice.
I think every single person we encountered did this. This was a bad idea. They do. They should be on the right side, right into the little thing. And I think we're gonna get started. We don't have quorum, but I did plan for the eventuality. So let's start. Oh, are we recording? No, we're not recording.
We are recording.
We are. Okay. Yes. Well, fantastic. Because I don't think I said. I mean, in that case, we'll note to delete the recording until we start. Until this point, it's 4:36. We're going to convene this working session. Just for notes, myself, Kendall Carter, Coates Counselor, Sarah Park, undergraduate, and Professor Richard Bensel. Faculty are present, as well as Terrell Malone.
Yeah.
Oh, and Gabriel Coffin, Chair of the Assembly, are present. And I mentioned before, we don't typically have a quorum, but noting our restrictions in terms of availability, that is just the reality of weekly meetings. You didn't miss anything. We just said we're going to strike the recording before my calling to be in order at 4:36.
Wait, I'm confused. Why are we recording if we only have three people?
Because this is a working session, we don't need a quorum.
So then why are we recording?
Because it's we're public record, we're transparent.
Oh.
But anyways, we don't actually yet have, and we don't have a quorum, so we're going to skip that, which brings us to the housekeeping changes to the code, which is all the draft language we had. So at the risk of me continuing to talk too much, are there any thoughts, comments, questions, or concerns with the proposed language in any one of the boxes? There are a few new things. One is the proposed language for non-compliance. You'll see in highlighted red
on page three.
Yes, actually, I did have page numbers. So on page three, it says the prior language was borrowed from the language from public order under Title IV. As Richard noted, there are, as I've also known, a lot of concerns with that language is in Title IV. So I attempted to, based off discussions there, I attempted to narrow it to the scope as Michelle had noted, in essence saying to refuse to comply with the validly issued penalty or remedy dispensed by the Office of the Judicial Administrator, barring terminology elsewhere, but again saying if you have your paper and you don't do it, you are violating the code a second time. I know Michelle had some attachments she had sent for what other universities do. I'd imagine implying that she would like to see that language tweaked, but
so,
absolutely, Richard.
So, looking at that red part, can you dispense with the issue? So, make it valid penalty or remedy dispensed?
Certainly.
Dispensed and issued.
Absolutely. Certainly. I mean,
just a suggestion.
No, absolutely. The intent was trying to narrow it to the penalty must be valid, and it must be the penalty must be validly issued and then validly given out, but it is likely surplusage. But that is the one change to the prior language we saw. And then at this point, I'm just gonna walk for it briefly because we have members who have not even heard before. The first one on page 2 is increasing the statute of limitations to university registered organizations from 1 to 3 years. That was requested at the request of the judicial administrator. And in essence, her contention that we need that extension to allow for hazing, or that's the pattern of conduct. Then also tweaking the suspension period instead of up to 1 year, up to a maximum of 5 years. That was put forth in an effort to prevent expulsion if, in essence, we can do a 1 year or expulsion. This gives more granularity. And with the committee discussed previously, concerns and an intent to adopt guidance to the hearing boards for when such a remedy would be appropriate as opposed to just expelling or removing a university registered organization permanently. Then moving on, as I mentioned at the start, was the refusing to comply with a valid order. Actually, Richard, before I go on, yes.
So, with reference to these men,
yes.
Can you tell us if any of the missing had objection?
Absolutely, that's what I would do.
Reservations.
Absolutely.
If they don't, that's fine too, but I'd like to know what they're thinking.
Absolutely, and please feel free to raise your hand. By the nature of this, I'm going to do a lot of talking. I don't, as much as I'm able to do so, and I don't mind doing so, please do feel free to jump in. So in terms of the suspension, the extension of suspension from 1 to 5 years, that is something that actually I haven't heard anyone, even in the community, object to, because it allows more discretion, more granularity, and even talk of using that as a trying to bring the Greek system back into the code, that's a larger question. That is, in terms of the statute of limitations, I know actually the judicial codes counselor had raised just a concern in terms of why we need to rig 3 years, and I would defer to Michelle if she's not here, but I've noted that because that's a question I think it's very to establish a pattern to support recent actions. I mean, if you haze for 2 years and stop, there's no point to drudge up an old skeleton unless you're continuing to do it, in which case we can use that as a baseline to show intent. But I don't, Michelle not being here, I will defer to her necessarily that I had some concerns in that regard. If anything you want to add.
I just spoke to Michelle about it like an hour ago. She said they were just trying to reflect the 3 years, so it's not just like out of nowhere that's the fraud, and that it's important to like establish a pattern that was basically just reiterated.
Okay.
So, I think it has some validity just because usually organizations do have a pattern of hazing. But if there was one instance of hazing 3 years ago and then drag it up, it seems like it's just giving the judicial administrator more jurisdiction, even if there's not a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Richard, yes.
So, Ken, you might know the answer to this. So, in the press releases from the university, in particular the one from Mark Polo, that there was a science salon had been removed from the university, but it turns out that the action that revoked that thing, the alleged being with this guy was a member of Psy Epsilon, but he wasn't a member of Psy Epsilon. But my question is, who made the decision that Martha reported to expel Psy Epsilon after the weekend's incidents? Was that Michelle?
Michelle has no jurisdiction with Greek organizations. She only oversees student organizations.
So Gabe seems to
know. So the distinction between university registered organizations and university recognized organizations. I brought this up this morning, actually, at a different meeting. A university registered organization would be like something that has an OrgSync account, like the ping pong club. The only university recognized organizations are Greek organizations. And the articles of recognition, like the rules for recognition, are spelled out are spelled out in the Office of Fraternity and Sorority Life under the Office of the Dean of Students.
And one of the provisions in those rules is that at any time the president can expel, like couldn't just choose not to recognize a Greek organization. SIU had actually been suspended for 3 years, and then the university abbreviated that to 18 months like a week ago or like 2 weeks ago. And so they had been like they had been told that they would like be able to come back. The president had decided like, okay, we're going to bring you back. And then they did, allegedly did this. And then the president said, I won't consider recognizing this organization anymore. So that's kind of why it's the president and, you know, her advisors that are making the decisions and not the judicial administrator.
So there are, it's a her complete discretion, even if
yes.
the information she had was wrong.
Yes.
That she had.
As far as I can tell.
Okay.
I mean, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my understanding. That's my understanding as well. There's been a discussion a number of times that I've heard over the years. Should Greek Life come back under the code? The question, of course, is my understanding is the separation was done primarily for like legal liability to put them at arm's length. That being said, I believe there is some jurisprudence that in essence has said that that's a legal fiction anyway, so the liability still follows, in which case the reason to hold them at arm's length doesn't necessarily hold anymore. That being said, that's a longer discussion. I will say though that
No. It was only to bring up because we talked about it last time.
Absolutely. Of course. So that's. And it says, anyone else have questions or concerns regarding just this first proposed change? Hearing none, on to the second one, which I actually jumped ahead to because that was one of the more contentious ones at our last meeting. It's the first one is primarily changing it from, instead of a mandatory, if you don't comply with your sanction, you must automatically be suspended. It gives the judicial administrator discretion. And on that, Michelle's position was, by making it discretionary, we are unable, you don't need to have a violation of the code that would say to not follow your remedy from the JA's office is a violation, which is why you see the First Amendment and then an additional penalty. As Richard mentioned, there was a lot of discussion about the lawful order of a clearly identifiable university official. That provision is actually, Michelle may have stumbled on it incidentally, but that's, I would argue, it's one of the more contentious provisions in the entire code. And that's why we have tried to cabinet. I mean, I think Michelle has a legitimate interest, and that's why we tried to tighten it down. That being said, there was plenty of discussion to be had, and I'm sure we will have it. So, first, Mr. Crawford.
I actually just wanted to go back to the last one really quickly. Is
sure.
that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, for under on the first change where you were under D, it says 3 calendar years, but at the bottom it's 5 years. Why is there a difference?
So do you mean for the first bullet, we changed it so that the statute of limitations is 3 years, and the suspension
of Okay. So the period refers to the statute of limitations.
That is correct.
Okay, yeah.
The
there we go. Okay.
It's on the first page. So
there we go. So it's 3 years instead of
1 year.
Okay. And then we made it 5 years.
For the penalty.
That's what I thought. I thought we would be up 5 years.
There.
I have another question. What's the policy for, like, Greek Life?
So the policy for Greek Life, that would be... Actually, I know a little bit about it. I will give you. How are you? I'll give you what information I do know. Right now, Greek Life is under OFFCIL, unless they change the acronym. It's Off Campus Living Office in Greek.
I think it's the Office of Fraternity and
Sorority. Which is under OFFCIL. It's Off Campus. Off Campus Living exists, and then either way, it's under a university office.
OFFCIL is the acronym Office of Fraternity and Sorority Life.
Oh,
I think it's under the Student Life Office.
We'll look this up.
Well, either way. They exist in our university office. The exact details, which we will figure out. I'll have to tell you after. But they exist under there. They're university recognized. They're self-managed. The Greek tri-councils handle a lot of their own internal discipline matters, including, in essence, if it's not major, they'll do it themselves because they're separate from us. If it is major, the university can just, you know, it's the university can yank, and they do and they have. But for Greek Life, in essence, they exist in another silo, which is. Either good or bad, there's a discussion, do you want to bring them back? But that is outside of the scope of statute of limitations. That being said, there is talk that this is actually one of the first steps to do if you want to bring them back in, because having that discretion is something that I think would be valuable to them.
I think members are still under the code, so pacing occurs at that individual level, and individual group members are prosecuted by the
Absolutely. Any other questions on the first? We were just looking at the going to code by code change by code change on the first one, which is just the statute of limitations and the suspension.
Yep.
Any questions? Okay. In that case, moving back to the second one, as I mentioned, just for Jeremy's benefit, I struck the copy paste from Title IV because that is a, I would argue, possibly one of the most contentious language in the code. I replaced it with what I think is tighter language. Richard mentioned, I think rightly, that valid issued is surplusage when considered with dispensed by the office. But that being said, the intent is to make it so that if you don't comply with a sanction, you broke the code again, and we can go through that process without necessarily opening it wide up to anything. So I should also, in the fairness, Michelle has not registered any concerns, but I would say the fact that she sent us, I think, three or four, or just a number of other colleges, provisions for failure to comply would imply that she's looking for something maybe a little more. I don't necessarily what she didn't tell me, but just a full disclosure. Actually, she did say that.
Do you think it's clear enough what a validly issued penalty or remedy is? Do you think that everything that, I mean, do you think this could be too vague and encompass more things than the previous language?
I just actually verified Michelle did not register any emails about any other details as one. I don't think it's too broad. The idea of validly issued, I mean, there is always concern when you're providing it. Validly issued, if necessary, would come down to the hearing board. And that, to me, it's if you've gone through the process, you sign an SDA or a hearing board handed you something, that's validly issued. If the JA just says, write me a paper tomorrow, that's invalidly issued. Of course, the question is, I'm open to any clarifying language.
This is too narrow then because the JA doesn't issue sanctions that are determined by a hearing board.
Okay. Well, then we will. That being said, I figured I'd start with the narrowest language I thought would work instead of going wide and narrowing. Better. So, but though I will. Thank you for bringing that up. But any other questions or concerns? As I said, the goal is to try and care.
This is John. I just think there should be a hyphen between validly and issued.
No, validly is an adverb describing. I'm sorry, validly.
Right.
No, validly is an adverb describing the verb issued.
So again, validly issued.
No.
I think we actually might be just striking issued and make it any valid penalty or remedy expense by the Office of Administrator or the University Hearing and Review Boards. And that's, I suspect, where we'll go, and that'll hopefully do it. And then we'll, next meeting, Michelle will tell us if in person, if she's going to, if she would like changed. Are there any questions on that topic? Hearing none, going on to the third topic. This is proposed language for non-matriculated minors. Providing more context, this was brought to us by the Office of Risk Management based on the fact that the definition of student as currently construed is very broad in that class. As the hearing boards and traditionally is incredibly broadly construed, there the Office of Risk Management is concerned, therefore, that if you're on class four, if you're on campus as a fifth grader for a camp or anything, even if you're remotely considered classes and you do something wrong, technically you would have all the rights and recourse under the code. And to a certain extent, for a one-day camp or a two-day camp, that's absolutely correct. There was concern brought up primarily by Professor Leibowitz that we have a number of high school students who are taking classes through the university. They are about as close to students as they can get, but they're not full students. And the concern was, how do you, if they want to show up to a protest, in theory, by carving them out, they have no, their regulations could say, you can't protest at all, or we'll toss you. And that was a concern of our, again, fringe protest freedom of expression, and balancing that, and also the also caveat was also written, what are the written behavioral expectations? They could be, they can in theory be anything, and that would also trigger the carve out. And those were concerns raised by her. Unfortunately, she's not here to expound upon them, but in full disclosure, that is where we currently are in terms of this.
So I really like the bringing there so long as the individuals are subject. Procedures, so that we ensure that they are covered by something.
Yes.
The only concern I have is if, and I'm not sure how to fix this, I'm just going to throw it out there.
Really?
Think about is if those written behavioral expectations, policies, or procedures are in direct conflict with the
our culture at Cornell. For example, so the idea that we would be releasing them to a policy that is abhorrent to ours. And I think that's such an edge case of probably not really legislating towards, but just something to consider as we're talking about that relationship. If anybody can think of a way to avoid that case, great.
So the person who writes this, they made their own expectations, policies, or procedures.
So in theory, according to Earth Management, to hold anything that's not through an actual matriculated student, you have to have a written policy to get approved from Risk Management, and therefore it's unlikely. But so it'd be the organization that's doing it. So Cornell, Summer College at Cornell has a summer judicial administrator, which operates very similar to the code, but it's not actually arguing that it's a violation of the code. But that's so you. It's really, if it's a soccer camp or a day camp, they write the regulations, and it goes somewhere as simple as it's a 1 day camp. We're just going to send you home.
So I think you just actually answered my question too, which is the right place isn't here for that. The right place is in the group that approves those organizations, that they should have a policy on what policies are acceptable for those groups.
Yes. It's something that had been brought forward was, and again, I'm not sure how palatable the administration would be to this, but in essence, a way for this committee or the assembly to say, we're going to carve this out, but upon request, we will review a policy and try, in essence, to try and balance that. The biggest concern was all I always heard was if you are high school students, because they are the club. I mean, if you're an 18-year-old high school senior in your spring semester of high school taking a class in Cornell with freshmen, in all practical purposes, you're indistinguished. We may be older than some of our actual students. And to the concern was if they want to protest or otherwise engage in the protection of this code, they, in theory, could just be, if their procedures say, we'll just toss you, you could just be tossed. And that's the concern that's been brought up. Not the 5 or 8 year olds.
And if that, they have a procedure that would be antithetical to our.
Precisely.
So, and that would be kind of trying to
bring up. Yes.
There should be a way to do that, but I don't think it's here. Or now.
Yes.
Or now. That might be an improvement for later.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why Professor Lieberowitz had a lot. As Professor Bentzel knows, she's very much in terms of the freaks, been very up on that. So I was hoping to have her today. She was looking at some language to hopefully have a suggestion for how we might still, I mean, but there's no reason to subject to put a 5-year-old through the judicial process.
Right.
I read that might be laughable. But that being said, the fringe cases are the ones that are the concerns, not the soccer game.
Right.
But are there any questions on that? This proposal. This is the one, actually, I think is the least ready. In terms of the progress on this, is the least far along, and that we need to know. I think that's a very open question. But is there anything else anyone wants to raise on that? Okay, hearing none, then the next one would be on page 5. Ah, yes, removal and definite suspension. This is actually all striking language. This was brought to us, or actually brought to me, 4 or 5 years ago now, by the amendment, because it was 3 or 4 JCCs ago, and repeated by Emily Sincerico, Edible, Olifant, et cetera. In essence, the idea that an indefinite suspension is just that indefinite. The code currently allows you to go up to 5 years for expulsion. And because of that, the idea was we're going to suspend you up to 5 years, and after 5 years, indefinite is almost just you're in limbo forever. So the idea of, and actually, Michelle has stated publicly, and actually, I can say this, honestly, this is even one of her interview questions, was what are your thoughts? And so she said she thinks, again, there's no reason to do this considering having discretion up to 5 years. So this is simply removing it from the code entirely. Either you're suspended for a definite term or you are expelled.
And that helps simplify it, making it easier to understand.
Yes.
For the set of code.
Yes. So any other comments or questions? That's a relatively simple one. We're just striking something. And if anyone finds anywhere else I missed it, I did a control F for indefinite. I read through all the provisions. I think I got everything, but we will put it throughout another close look. The next one is proposed language regarding misuse of confidential information. Because the hearing is public, I'll flat out say it. This is in response to concerns raised by a number of university offices after Ms. McBride's actions in the spring. Including the hearing, we're going so far as in the written report to morally condemn him, but say he didn't break the code.
Can someone please briefly bring me up to beat on the McBride case?
Sure. I'm sorry. absolutely. So, no, absolutely. I appreciate that. And if everyone, in essence, former chair of this committee, senior, and it was on a confidential working group that was reviewing financial aid policy. He was given a document. There's some dispute whether I was told it was confidential. Either way, the university was under the assumption it was confidential. He provided a copy to Cornell Daily Sun. The university, through a whole bunch of complaints, which again, there's some conflict of complaint about what. Either way, there was a complaint filed alleging he violated the code of conduct. The hearing board cleared him on all the charges he was charged on, saying, and I were rough paraphrasing, that it was morally wrong, he didn't violate the code. And there was a concern, in essence, of, okay, it appears to have uncovered at least a hole in the code, and that's why that is, in a nutshell, the McBride case. You leak data, hearing board convened, cleared of all of it, and the question is, how do we want to at all address, or how do we want to address it in the code?
Thank you.
So this doesn't apply to the McBride case because there wasn't the McBride
case. Like, that's
right. This I think what this is doing is setting the expectation that if you want it to be private, it has to be writing that together. I have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem in the McBride case was was not writing some, even some members, it was a working group, it's not even a committee. Some members of the working group even denied or couldn't remember that it had been asked to be confidential. It was very sloppy.
Okay, I think the best reason to add a specification in the code for
writing. And I think that's fine. But it was quite contentious.
Well, and that's precisely, I apologize, that is precisely why I tried, and I personally labored with him all saying her email, saying she understands, she's concerned it's overly broad. My intent was to try and, in essence, appease the legitimate concerns of the administration that they need to be able to operate confidentiality, and also the legitimate interest of the community to be able to have the representatives in there. While still balancing the fact that you can't just say X is confidential. So I think the whole idea is it has to be done in writing, and you have to have agreed to it. Frankly, the easiest way to do it would be sign this form. In this case, we have a full paper trail, there's no issues. I know as a person Lieber's concerns were broad. I didn't get any more than that, but.
What did she think it's too broad?
She just said, I'm concerned with the language I believe is over broad. And I will verify her email, but I believe it's all she said.
No, I don't believe that. Just don't understand what it would be. We have to ask for it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe where is it looking? Like, to know that there's a long document or
absolutely. There's we raise your hand.
Oh no, just
the only other issue that I see with this is again, who is given the authority to make a document confidential, which isn't really defined.
Yes.
And that could become an issue, even if you've agreed to it, but it turns out that that person didn't have the authority to save this document as confidential. I don't know if it's worth worrying about, but again,
no, I agree with that. Absolutely.
Usually, my understanding is that this is usual practice. In most cases, at the very beginning, when a committee is constructed, is that you are told, asked to join, but only upon these conditions. And so if you don't sign, you're not on the committee.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes an entry. So is there that answers your question about whether it'll be on the document or not? It would be a matter of consent.
And in terms of the actual specifics, part of the reason we have SJs and hearing boards is conceivably if it came down to, I mean, I would hope we wouldn't have that exact hole come through. That means that you have to balance stuff. We want the code to be readable versus you also the problem with itemized lists is the first argument you'd make is, oh, we need an itemized list, this isn't on there.
Right.
So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I mean, that means that if anyone, and especially Risa, if she has a way on a solution or another program language, by all means, I think the goal is the university has a legitimate interest if you've proven they agree to confidentiality that you actually have to keep your word without taking you to court for violating an NDA, which is the last thing you want to do.
I think this is certainly an improvement over what we currently have. So even if it's not exactly as it is, right? I think we're doing better than we were yesterday. So
yes. Well, are there any other questions or comments on that provision or the draft?
Okay. I think maybe instead of release or misuse, we could use a word like disclose.
Misuse is kind of
broad. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, is it misuse if you put it on the ground and you kick it? You know, like what counts as misusing a document? I know that it's used, you know, in the above. I know it's used above, but it's included with other kind of more specific words. I don't know. I just think disclose might be a good word.
Misuse is used typically for like using someone's dining card
yes.
to get them. And so I just think it's a little bit different.
Oh, absolutely. And that's
a code violation.
It's a code
violation
to use someone else's.
Yeah.
Or not. Can we just like take that out? Can we just take that out? Can we just take that out?
To use some of the
URBs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we take that out? Is there a way to remove that from the code so that we can do that? No?
Okay. Well, it says that even explicitly says dining cards.
Yes.
That's one right above.
Right? Like with a better authorization.
Either way, I think with the disclosure misuse, I have no problem with narrowing the language is absolutely. I think that's a good change.
So Kendall, am I understanding you correctly? Misuse would apply to things like photo IDs, but that's not a university.
No. She's referring to
like
the grid
the
provisions above, where that's adding the fourth provision to the misuse. The other provisions are misusing IDs, and the hearing board actually referenced saying this provision actually talks about misusing IDs. So number one is yes, to use misuse parking permits, dining cards, ID cards, etc.
Which is why we shouldn't use misuse below.
Yeah, that's right. So it should be just
okay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will make that change. Thank you.
What about a non-university document? Like I wonder what could be part of a non-university document. Well, like that would be part of it. But like, would my notes for class be a non-university document? Isn't every document either a university document or a non-university document?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome to this is precisely why the code needs to be simplified, because if the world is university or non-university documents, to say both, you've just said it's documented as your plus issue. That being said, are there any other comments on the amendment? Seeing none, going next is the portal language clarifying new HRB appointments. This is housekeeping for actual practice. We are traditionally the assembly, if you're going to be a senior or a last year PhD or a last year professional student, and you want to submit your being your put through the committee, we give you a 1 year term to allow you to serve. Technically, we're not allowed to do that. We've been doing it. It's just simply clarifying that if you're entering your last year of study, you get a 1 year term. Conceivably, if you were to, similar to myself, be here as an undergrad and continue for grad school, you could renew and that wouldn't be an issue. The other change is actually adding currently serving members can be reappointed if reconfirmed by the UA after review by the CJC. Traditionally, what we've done for reappointments has been the CJC will get the names. We will ask the OJA and use that CJCs to formalize that. We'd ask around and say, is there anything reasons we should not, any misconduct you're aware of? I don't think we've ever gotten any. Actually, no, I think we had one person who never showed up, so they were removed. But otherwise, we would simply then review it, push it on to the UA, and the UA would then formalize it. Again, we've done this for a while, but it's just a matter of, just for transparency, we need to know what we're doing, and the JRA is a concern that you could argue that are the appointments valid or not.
And yeah, let's not have that happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why go on the rabbit hole when we can simply just fix this quite easily?
Okay.
It's probably the most housekeeping of all the changes here. Any questions on that? Hearing none. The next one is proposed language. We're already clarifying the JA appointments procedures. This is an interesting provision, as it actually represents what I would argue is a typo, our former typo in the code. To provide background, in the late 90s, the JA used to be limited to terms of service, so the JA could serve for 4 years, and we need to get a new JA. That harkens back to the idea that you would have a JA from a faculty member who would be JA for a couple years and go back to being a faculty member. That's what the handbook generally does. But as we moved over time, the JA has become a professional position, starting with Mary Beth Grant, the prior JA, when she was appointed in 1999, when it came through, and her second term came through in 2003, after discussion with, I believe, then President Rawlings, it was decided that we should remove the term limit, and we removed it, but by doing so, it, in essence, left language in that saying in October of the year preceding a JD's term expiration, you have to convene a search committee, which would make sense because it was, I actually used to read, in October following the second, this is the second term, your second term when we know you're going to be out anyways, that was left in. We haven't followed this procedure in a long time. The office assemblies on behalf of the OJA notified us, you should be aware of this, and hence why we're doing this language. Actually, I would argue this is the one urgent change because October is around the corner. And in terms of, I also, when drafting this, I reviewed a bunch of old JA reports as well as my old notes. Mary Beth Grant, in front of UA, numerous times said she wanted additional feedback from the community, additional feedback from the UA, and additional district. She felt her office was operating in isolation, which is, to be honest, partially by design to avoid the administration influencing the office, so the office tries to act quasi-independent. That being said, she was concerned she had no official feedback, and there also was concern that actually after Amanda Minnickis came forward to the agency to tell the UA some of the things, some of her concerns, there was also concern that the UA itself was, in essence, we were hearing from just the JA and not necessarily the JCC, and therefore there was concern about are we providing adequate supervision to the office, which is why the language that I have proposed, you know, and we're going to have a discussion on, is 4 months prior to the expiration of the term. The term used to be coupled in January 1 to January 1, which is why formally it was October. Now, in the week to 4 months prior, there will be a committee convened of the JCC, chair of the CJC, two members from the president's office, and two members from the office of the UA, who will, in essence, review some of the records from the JA office, provide feedback, and then make a recommendation should the JA be reappointed, yes or no. And the president obviously has to approve that, and it's the UA. But it's, to me, it's balancing, A, on paper, we should, the JA is going to ask for more feedback and more, I guess, accountability, and the code says we need to have a search committee. We don't need that, but I think the spirit in that is good, in that we should be engaging in a lot of feedback. That being said, I'm open to any discussion. Personally, my vision for this would be the committee releases both a private document to the JA, but also potentially releases a public document saying the JA, we commend the JA on X. Obviously, there are ways to do it, but there would definitely be private feedback and possibly public component, but that would be to be determined over time.
So this is a provision that really the University Assembly should pay attention to.
Yes, yes.
I mean, unlike some of the others, which look like a little bit, this had... Okay, we will definitely point it out to when it comes up to how it can be
ensured. Yeah. Our meetings will get longer.
Yeah,
and I suspect I'll be doing more talking.
No.
But I think this, the intent and spirit of this is just in following what we've heard you do anyway, and I think it's getting a good clarification of how it should work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Gabe?
Yeah, so I think that, just at first glance, the only things that kind of I would consider changing would be take, it says the committee will internally elect a chair and may make a recommendation. I think it should be shall, I think its purpose is to make the recommendation. So I don't know what it's doing, if it just kind of convenes and it doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It seems like it has to either recommend in favor or against, so it should be shall. Then the other thing that I had was for the 4 months, I think that if a JA is ever not going to get reappointed, I think that we should convene the committee earlier because they're going to want time to find a new job. And if this process is starting 4 months before they're not here anymore, it's probably not going to be enough time for them to do that. And so then I would add something at the end that says something about the recommendation has to be made at least, 3 or 4 months before the expiration of her term, so that there's kind of a lame duck grace period whereby the, whoever occupies the office can look for a new job, et cetera. I don't know that, I don't know if there's a good reason why we wouldn't want to include that, that I just haven't thought of yet, but those are just my initial thoughts.
No, I appreciate that. In terms of the time frame, obviously the time frame is, that's fungible. Something that I also think of is in terms of summer, if it's over the summer, you need to have people who are able to come in and do it. That, so in terms of how do you coach that in terms of language, if the committee has to convene in July, that will be a tall order. The other part of that is in terms of the JA not being reappointed, it's likely not going to come out and say, we're not reappointed. It's going to say, the JA has decided to take on new responsibilities to the university, or clearly it would not be. I would also argue the point of this is the UA has never not confirmed a JA, And part of that is public appearance. We don't want to publicly tell someone no. And by that point, everything's already in line. So that if there truly is an issue, this allows it to be done gracefully and frankly privately, which I think has a higher chance of smaller. If it's clear it's not working, but it's not egregious, the UA is not, I doubt, would publicly remove someone. But this would allow a discussion. And frankly, say we want to consider just getting someone new. But in terms of
an option, an opportunity elsewhere.
Yes, whatever that may be.
So I think I understand what Dave is saying, and I think I agree that a decision on this board should be 4 months prior to the expiration of the term. What that means for convening the committee, I'm not sure, but I think that decision, I think I it's a little bit of empathy for the outgoing person is they need to have a little bit of time to figure out their next steps.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, would 5 or 6 months preceding be a more appropriate timeline?
I think absolutely 5 or 6. I would agree for 6, but
yeah, I would agree. It's better to have them
6 is a long time.
Well, that's
a grace period for a 2-year appointment.
I would lean shorter. I would lean towards like 4.
How many OJAs have there been?
Historically?
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
What do you say?
The average term?
Decision.
8 months and then the decision.
Well, that's what we're talking about, is convening the meeting.
Yes.
At 6 months.
Yes.
And having a decision by 4 months.
So you'd have 2 months to make a decision.
Right.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
2 weeks.
Yes. To Richard's point, in essence, the question is how many JAs have we had? I can, what's the average, 10 years? I can tell you prior to Meredith Grant, who was our prior JA, there was a 4-year term limit, and we actually followed it. So I don't know the exact number. I'm sure I will actually tell me enough to look that up. But in essence, Meredith Grant was different.
The point is that if it's, you know, let's say the average term in practice is 4 years, then you basically are having a limit. It's a
really weak. Well, now that we've stripped the term limit out, for County's Mary Beth Grant, the prior JA arrived at Cornell in 1999. She was JA through 2016. So that's about 17 years. So that's a...
15, right?
She was here, she was JA through 2016, and she arrived in 1999.
No, 2015, because Jody...
Oh, no, you're correct. So it was 16 years, because Michelle was brought in, she resigned relatively suddenly, so Michelle, by the way, 16 years to a lot, well, it's a 10-year the last JA.
But we only have one instance, so we can't really say.
Yes, so Michelle would be here for 4 years, 8 years, 10 years. We don't know. But it seems like convene at 6 months and then have our race by 4. If you can get it earlier, even better. If you can't.
Yeah.
You spelled counselor wrong.
I'm there.
Ah,
this
there we are.
Right?
That's
not
the
there.
No, that's so, the
council. No, part of the council.
Yes, no, I apologize.
Well, the councils and counselors and consoles. And
I do appreciate that, because I'm sure council's office and the other councils would be happy to tell us otherwise.
And assemblies and assemblies.
Yes, assemblymen, assemblywoman, assemblyperson.
Advisor and advisor.
Either way, are there any other comments or questions on this language? In terms of all language here, it's the most monumental that A, it's in a typo, but B, it's replacing the process that I think and I believe will allow for more feedback and, frankly, allow for us to not have issues, hopefully minimizing this earlier, which is also why I wrote the JCC into it, because they're the ones who deal with the JA all the time.
I think we'll have a smoother transition.
Yes, absolutely. And then also, if a JA chooses to not seek reappointment, we'll know it sooner. So we're reading feedback, we'll know, oh, actually, I'm not going to seek reappointment, instead of knowing it 2 months prior to the term and having to have an interim. Conceivably, it wouldn't happen, assuming you're willing to wait at your term. Fantastic. And that brings us to the last bit of proposed language. This is another, possibly brought to the Assembly by Amanda Minicus 5 years ago in terms of their... Without going into details, there were cases that she had described hypothetically, and that she had seen similar fact patterns where there were individuals subject to a no-contact directive, whereas one individual would be subject to an I-can't-talk, individual one cannot talk to individual two, individual two is not bound at all. So individual two would go out of their way to put themselves in positions that would cause individual one to break no contact inadvertently or maliciously. And the concern was, in this case, that is contrary to the interest of justice. And by binding them both, the whole idea is you both stay away, and it makes this is an interim measure. So it's this is until we sort it all out, stay away. Michelle also said publicly before that she would only issue no contacts that are mutual. This is just codifying the practice, and that moving forward we'll do that. And also the last one is, if you violate no contact traditionally, you are immediately suspended. In our further ideas of jumping right suspension might not be the best idea, it says the JA can impose additional interim measures, modify the directive, or suspend, instead of just saying you must suspend. So any comments or questions on that?
I was wondering, what might one of those interim measures look like?
Sure. So it's say I go to the JA, John Doe beat me up, and he might be following or might be harassing me. That means at this point, frankly, if I have bruises or a police report, you'll get an interim suspension. So in essence, it's an action taken until we can get through the process, which could take days or months. Or in this case, we think there might be an issue. We don't have evidence to really jump to suspension, but it's no contact to stay away. You're not allowed to talk to them. It might involve you being moved dorms. It might involve you being moved to classes. You might say, okay, you have to follow X route, and John, or this, you will follow this route, they'll follow this route to minimize the chances. It's a band-aid until we can get through the full process, figure out what actually happened, and finalize the solution. Any other comments or concerns on that? Version. Okay, hearing on that exhausts that those changes. They said I think the biggest one will be for definition of student. I know that is, I think, the least vague.
As we're looking through these, I have one other request as we look for changes, and it's that we just kind of go through the whole code and replace the gender-based language with more updated gender-neutral language.
Mm-hmm.
Just a matter of urgency.
I will certainly put that down. Also, actually, I should provide this piece of context. The intent of this was theory and saying this is housekeeping changes that have been festering for years, or not. I've been languishing on our docket for years, including some that are relatively minor. Our intent was to pass this, hopefully at our next meeting, assuming I think we have that ability so we can nail down the definition of student language. Pass it, hopefully have the UA consider it, and then after this is done, to look at the code holistically for, frankly, a complete overhaul and simplification, and taking the bones and figuring out, okay, how do we clean it up? How do we, in essence, revitalize without losing its core principles? Considering the meeting events of the UA meeting yesterday, that the second part of that plan, which is the overhaul, I would say right now is currently on hold. That being said, from what I've been told, the Office of University Council, they don't want massive. They don't want small tinkers. They want either one overhaul. They want nothing. And this is the whole idea. This is the changes. Any of the J1, there are changes that need to be done. They're urgent. They're relatively small. We do this. We push this through, and then we review the code. In this case, these are still like getting their 90% done. I can't. The captions just drop them. So we will finish this, and then having said that, I think the new code we would certainly do.
Yeah. The only reason I asked for it, even at this point, was because it makes no sense to use the code at all.
Absolutely. And that's right. And I completely agree. And also the definition of university officials on the list of when we go through to clarify what is a university official. But are there any other comments generally about this provisions or these provisions? Gabe, do you know?
No, sounds like you got it under control.
Fantastic. So that exhausts the formal agenda. Gender. Freudian slash. I'm also writing gender neutral language on my paper. So.
That's how they'd say it in England.
Gender. Anyway, so that addresses that. The last part of our meeting, we do have a quick executive session, which we may or may not need. The meat of the meeting is the UA's meeting yesterday, the provision to request a timeline at the end or at the next meeting for how we're going to handle this. And the second part of the motion, which is a directive to the CJC that we have something by the end of the fall, after consulting the University Assembly's bylaws, the second part of that directive is actually a violation of the bylaws. It says the committee, it says that committee, we can and are required to report. It says the committee itself maintains its own discretion over its resolutions that have it. In essence, says the committee wants to control its own motions and resolutions. That being said, we are not going to ignore the UA. But what we're going to do is we're going to determine how to best handle this. And it's also, even also, is it's been tried to highlight yesterday, the housekeeping changes are important. They are virtually done. To drop them is, in essence, throwing them maybe on the back door. That being said, in terms of how to handle the idea of hate speech and the campus code of conduct, I told a number of you privately, I don't have to say on the record. I have done a lot of research on university codes, research on just academic literature. And actually, I'll even say if you do a Bing or Google News search for free speech on campuses, I was able to find about 300 articles written in just the last 24 hours alone. This is a hot button issue. There are very strong arguments on either side, but from what I could find, I have not yet found a code at any university. If they're public, they generally get stripped down. And then if they're private, there's generally either they generally are ineffective or they end up chilling legitimate speech. And President Pollock has reaffirmed and stated quite unequivocally her support of freedom of expression and her concerns about hate speech codes, even referencing her prior tenure at the University of Michigan.
So two things. The first thing, Abe, I want to congratulate you.
I appreciate that.
That would have tested the mettle of the committee, maybe people more senior than you.
My mettle was definitely tested.
Yeah, you did really well.
Thank you.
The second thing is, just before this meeting, Martha addressed the Faculty Senate and said in very strong terms that she intellectually was personally committed to a very strong free speech position. And that her experience in Michigan, she actually talked for about 10 or 15 minutes just on this issue because it was Q&A. So I'm abbreviating it, but she said that her experience in Michigan, where she didn't write a speech provision, but it was, she had some experience with how to apply, was that it didn't work either on the substantive level of achieving what people wanted to do, and it had many unintended consequences in enforcement. And she thought that there was no way to prevent it from being a slippery slope, traveling down, preventing forms of speech that she thought should be protected. She was saying that it's a personal position. She was still inviting us, and not us particularly in this committee, but the community to consider speech and possibly. But, it was a quite striking statement.
Sarah was next.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Sarah.
I had a question about our jurisdiction of the UAs.
Yes.
Does Martha have to pass anything?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's three things you should know. One, the UA on its own volition can let you know through the bylaws. CDC must bring it up. The UA will then pass it. And if it's on all but Title IV, the president can approve it, it's in effect. And it's Title IV, which is regulations of maintenance of public order, and that's RAMPO. That is a state law, and there's legal level implications. So that the board of trustees itself must approve that. If the president wants to change it, as currently written, the president needs to come through the UA, and the UA in the past is told, actually I was on it, we told President Scott no in terms of advance notice. A reasonable answer to protests, that's a long discussion. The UA told him no, that's suffice to say. So that's the in terms of our jurisdiction over the code. And then, thank you.
So just real quick, I've been spending a lot of my free time doing research on this because I think it's going to come up. The I would strongly encourage you to look at the links that I just sent out from the ACLU, from the American Bar Association, from the NCCD, because they directly address what we're going to be discussing. And I think it provided me with a lot of clarity as to what goals we're trying to achieve, defining what goals we're trying to achieve and making sure we're actually getting there. I encourage at least those three documents. There's lots out there. And one of the most disturbing pieces that I found, which I documented, which one of the links that was anecdotal, so not as useful as these, was that in at least one university where the regulations on the books were better than 2 years, during that time, because of the broad statement of policy against thoughts and speech rather than behaviors, what they ended up getting was a half a dozen students of color charged under it by white students, and zero white students charged by people of color. So I would encourage us to be very careful that we don't have a negative impact on the exact community that we're trying to protect. I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to have that impact. So I want us to be extremely thoughtful and careful when we discuss and look at how to set these policies.
Thank you. Actually, in terms of the UA has asked for a report on a timeline, and was that a personal note? I agree that it's something that even the CJC, people ask why they're moving so slowly, because we do. The unintended consequence, I mean, imagine if you're writing a law, you see how in the real world, the law has unintended consequences all the time. We try our darndest, even when we see the definition of student. That, in theory, on paper is a very small change, but the question, of course, is what do you need to look deeper, and that's why yesterday the meeting I attempted to bring up the idea that this timeline is incredibly aggressive. We will do our darndest. That being said, we need to balance it, and we need to find the silver bullet, because given the statements of President Pollack, I am fairly confident that if we don't find a silver bullet or something pretty darn close to it, we could write anything that's not going to get through.
I don't doubt that we can write something that will improve what we currently have. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what I think we should aim for. We can make it better. We are not going to make it perfect, but particularly based on these articles that I read, there are some things that we can specifically look at and address around behaviors specifically, and behaviors like threatening. Behaviors like harassing.
Yes.
So that's what we need to focus on with the behaviors. I absolutely think we can improve that code.
Absolutely.
And that's the goal we should achieve.
Yes. And as I was actually spoke to Michelle yesterday about that, and the code already prohibits harassment, and the definition of harassment, if you go far enough down the road of free speech, you arrive at harassment, and therefore there already is a stop. There already is, the end of the road already results in an offense under the JA. Violation of code. The question, of course, is how do you step it back? Because upon reading another article, I said, or read about a speech code, is you saw the campus, the local college Republicans were thrown off campus because they supported President Trump. I would argue that is another unintended side effect. And in terms of balancing it, this is going to be a long discussion. And Jeremy, if you want to respond, I'll then turn to the logistics, how do I want to handle this?
So the thought that's coming to my mind is underdeveloped and probably needs some additional, is that when we're looking at, we already have provisions in the code for some of these things, but we could look at something along the lines of if the infraction that you have committed specifically targeted a group based on their ethnic background, then we should add in some additional things that I think should be restorative kinds of things, like you need to be involved in something that's going to put you in contact with the group that you adversely affected. Learn what the negative impacts that you had on them. And really, again, taking that educational bent towards a restorative justice model, really work to educate them so they don't make the same mistake again, because that's really what we want at the end of the day, is don't do that again.
But
just briefly, I like Reese's sitting here. I like Reese's point in the last meeting, which is
to have concrete examples in front of
us. Absolutely.
Would be really useful to figure out exactly what it is that's not covered, what is covered, what, and so forth. I hear all kinds of imagined examples. I'd kind of like to see some new ones.
That ABA article has a few examples and how it's difficult to differentiate.
Some from our own community, I think, would also be quite if they're to show for that.
What I can do is I can go through and ask the some of the hierarchies are redacted in a public forum, so I can go through and pull some of the harassment. Well, actually, yesterday I was leafing through some of them myself in the afternoon. Out of personal curiosity, I must say, but there were discussions in terms of the hearing boards have considered in the past. Does a persistent pattern of racial slurs constitute harassment? And there's some of the cases where they've said you've in essence for stalking this person and using racial slurs. That's harassment. And here's frankly, I think one of them resulted in suspension. So my intent for the next meeting is to frankly spend some time looking through those records and pull out some examples, obviously fully anonymized, to say, here's where we currently stand, because, and Jeremy had a conversation before about the restorative justice aspect, like I think is one of the most promising things to come out of the JA's office in a long time. I know Meredith Grant had talked about it, Michelle was piloting it. I think really, considering our code is meant to be educational, that is an excellent area to push things, and for the code overall, it was my hope to actually formally institutionalize that in there, and I still have to get to that, but I completely agree with what you're saying.
Some examples, then the question, looking at those examples, whether it's primarily a question of revising harassment provision or a brand new section. The brand new section, that really, I'm skeptical.
Yes, Sarah, thanks for the next
one. No, I totally agree. I was just thinking of similar. I think especially because this particular instance that went on at LA is particularly confusing or difficult because the Zeta Psi representative, the guy from Zeta Psi is a TNS member. He was inebriated. He was dared to do a Trump impression. There were all these other stipulations that might make this more difficult for us to come up with language of this, all of this.
Mm-hmm. So then I think, and I also have to say, the challenge before us is quite broad, and I think we'll have a very robust discussion next to this game.
Yeah, so I know that this is technically a working group because there isn't a quorum, but I do want to make it clear that the assembly did pass for the record and for anyone who wasn't at the meeting yesterday, the assembly did pass a formal charge to the CJC to come back at the next UA meeting with a timeline. And so I think that it would be good to at least leave this meeting with some idea of what a potential timeline could look like. Because regardless of whether or not you think that should have been passed, it was. And so the committee does need to come back to the assembly with some sort of timeline for amending the code regarding hate speech.
Mr. Kaufman, thank you. Yeah. To clarify, per the bylaws of the university, the assembly is entitled and empowered to request information from us. As I said, we'll happily give them a timeline. In as far as charging the committee with you must do X, Y, Y in terms of actions, the bylaws give the committee their own jurisdiction, their only discretion in terms of what motion they consider. As I said at the beginning, I have no intent of flouting the university assembly's will. That frankly, the rules are not meant to be an impediment. And actually, after Jeremy, my hope is to discuss some of the logistics. I've already given some thought to them. But at the end of the day, the concern, and I think the reason I mentioned this is the bylaws, even the draft for the housekeeping code changes, I was trying to realize that I was unfortunately shouted down before I could bring them up. But people saying this needs to be priority number one, the committee has to have the discretion to say this is not an issue towards completion. They're urgent fixes. Finish them and then turn the matter hand with things late. So that is why I believe the bylaws give us that discretion, and the discretion I think this committee will intend to use. That being said, we will have a timeline, and our goal is to, frankly, get this done by the end of the semester. Next in speech, this is Jeremy.
So I do one other source of information that I wanted to bring up based on what's happening here. In my research, I checked all of the Ivy Leagues for bias information tracking. One of the things I really have to give Cornell kudos for is they are the only ones that make it easily, make that data easily accessible. It is right there, we track it. The human resources, workforce diversity, the Department of Inclusion and Workforce Diversity. So on their page, they have bias tracking at Cornell, and they do a twice annual report, and it's posted there, and it gives a full breakdown of bias incidents on campus. It's really detailed on what's actually going on here, and I think it's a great resource if you're interested in knowing what's happening.
Can we get that?
Yes, I will provide it
for the next meeting.
I'll send out the link now.
Yeah, well, so that we can all be referring to the same exam.
Absolutely. I will close some with the agenda, and I also have a projector next to in our teller. Some way to see what is the group for our next meeting. And actually, that exhausts figures and turns us to is Mr. Kaufman was kind of mentioned. There is a logistical challenge, and the other one is a challenge to figure out how we want to handle this. And there's mentioning Richard ahead of time, and Richard, you want to speak on this Zoom?
What?
I say, would you want to speak?
You were going to speak for me. Just say.
Well, I was going to say, as I was mentioning to Richard beforehand, our hope, and actually speaking with Marty Ash, that I had a phone call this morning, in terms of my hope is to hold like then some Friday, just because it's some time that people will be free, in public forum, and somewhere like Juris GO1, then get as many members of the committee there, in essence, just have all comers and say, look, we're trying to, because the thing is, they're also trying to figure out what is the community looking for. There's not a lot of rhetoric, a lot of emotion. The question, of course, is now once the reflex for a quick, almost knee-jerk reaction is passed, what is the actual sentiment? And that'll come with concrete examples as well as looking at the bias reports. So I think looking at it administratively, the next steps of the committee are our next meeting Wednesday to square away the housekeeping changes as much as possible. I think assuming we can get language, there's real intent to pass the next meeting, which also would allow the UA to handle it promptly. And then after that, to turn our full attention and undivided attention to this, looking hopefully to, I know we're coming up in fall break soon, which will make that Friday, and that week will be shot. But to figure out a time to have an open forum, to then speak. And then I also like I'm going to be meeting with reaching out to a bunch of student organizations to try and get an idea so I can report back to the committee. And then realistically, once we have the examples, start sitting there and going, okay, where does our code currently leave off? What do we cover? What do we not? What is not covered by code, but it gets covered in the bias system? What do communities want? And then we have to have a long discussion of where do we want to propose to move the line, because there is a line, but move it closer, while still balancing concerns of freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and the concerns about justiciability, and that there's also the legal specter in that, as Michelle has brought numerous times, that if our code is applied in an arbitrary, capricious manner, we can get sued. And if the definition is not airtight, and hearing boards are starting to split on it, in essence, there is no Supreme Court. If the hearing boards split, they split, and that can open the universe to lawsuits, as we saw similarly in 6.4, you had hearing boards going in completely divergent directions. And I mean, 6.4 has highlighted flaws, but that was one of the problems. First thing speakers is Richard, then Jeremy, and I don't think anyone's raised their hand.
Quick question, Gabe. When was the last meeting of the UA?
So the UA has a meeting on October 3rd. There's currently a meeting scheduled for October 17th. And another meeting scheduled for October 31st. There was a proposal to move the October 31st meeting, given that that is Halloween, and some people might not want to be at a UA meeting and be with their kids trick-or-treating or whatever, like him. Yeah, I don't happen to have kids, so I won't be doing that. But yeah, so then if there's one on October 31st, then there would be another UA meeting on 13th, and then another one on November 27th, and I believe that's the last UA. Those are all the UA meetings because because there are three in October. We won't have one in December unless we amend the calendar.
And there's talk of the Halloween one to December 5th.
Yeah.
So all those meetings are scheduled. Are any of them dedicated to anything?
in advance or?
In one of the October meetings, we're going to be hearing Michelle's, the JAA's formal report. She kind of gave us a preliminary report in September, but she has yet to submit the final report. I believe that we're going to hear from the Office of Transportation Services. The director, Bridget Brady, is going to come present to us. But otherwise, I think that the time is you know, mostly flexible. There are two other committees that also like to pass resolutions, and so we're going to.
So this is a new motion, but I think we should aim at November 13th. And that would give us time for this open forum. And it's going to take a couple meetings after that open forum to really digest and do this stuff. But that would give, so for the timeline, we make it November 13th. But this isn't a motion, this is just thinking ahead.
No, absolutely. As I said, we're going to, we're at the end of our meeting time, but that means that I vote no problem going to amend it to over. And that, I think that's a reasonable goal, November 13th or if it's the 14th, that meeting. So to have something relatively done, yes, again, obviously, I'm sure the way
they look at
it. Yes, and then after that, and there is a possibility that we will come back and say, we don't believe there's a way. I mean, as a committee, we have our full slate of options open in terms of looking at this, giving it the best look we can, giving it everything we have, and figuring out where we are as a matter of enforcement, as a matter of provisions, or is it somewhere where we just don't know, we simply can't go online. And I think that's a good shooting point to at least figure out where we want to head.
So let me just follow up on that. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for November 13th, that is November 27th, is my guess is that there's going to be a full discussion in the University Assembly.
Let me make sure I'm getting these dates right.
And that being the case, you know, this is something where you don't want to say, on November 27th, time's up, and we can't do it until spring. We want to get as much done as possible.
14th, sorry.
That's not a problem, that's right. 13th or thereabouts.
But just thinking again about how this interacts with the UA's right responsibility to consult and revise and so forth and so on.
And that's in the UA itself makes use of the table to the spring. That means that the goal is to get something on paper. In terms of, and I will draw up, that's just formalize that to present to the UA for this committee. And we will discuss it at our next meeting, which is also before the UA meeting, which is next Wednesday. But just to close, I'm also able to disclose, I've been working at planning meet with Risa Lieberwitz, A, looking at the definition of student language, but also B, she has been an ardent supporter of free expression, but also she is not allowed to reach for this. It's an area she has a very interest in. I talked to her and also to reach out to the administration because if the administration is willing to lend support or even tell us where they get an idea, because at the end of the day, I would rather that UA not go off into the woods, find something, and go and say, we found this great thing, and the administration just blow holes in it. So trying to reach out to them to make sure that we have the best chance of getting something through, and then just trying to reach out to the communities that are interested and see where we can go.
Speaking of that, reaching out to communities that are interested, I want to make sure we stay on top of the idea of having more provide feedback or something that we can kind of maintain that.
Yes, well, actually, thank you for reminding me. We will be using the comment feature of the Office of the Assemblies. We used it before. I know I mentioned it to the office earlier, saying please start making sure it works. So we will be, I would say, do that through web comments, an open forum, possibly two, depending how they go. The end of the day, we need to figure out, last night
demonstration.
Yes, it was. And that means that the information flow is not enough. I mean, in terms of looking at concrete changes to code, where frankly people are going to be, their academic careers are going to be in line. Yep. We need as much information as possible to arrive at the best reasoned conclusions. So are there any other last comments on that? Hearing none, the time is 5:48 and this working session is concluded. Thank you very much, everyone.
We're not going to need a big session.
You don't need to.
Oh, great.
I do think it's a really good idea to remember that.